We can go right into it if you want to.
You want to go right into it?
I don't want to go right into
it. Look at you.
Oh, I see what you're doing.
You're a little feisty this morning. Is that what you said?
I am so not. All I want to do is hear Jeff say this.
Now it's time for Homegrown on 94.7 WPBC LP Charlottesville with your hosts Clinton Johnston and Leslie M. Scott Jones, Charlottesville's only radio show devoted to local arts. And now...
Good morning, Sunday morning. Whether you are an art maker, art breaker, art faker, or an art partaker, you could be an art breaker. Art breaker, you got the best of me. And it's a copyrighted song, so, but we can sing it because it's the radio, right? Can we do that?
Stop it.
Welcome all, because all are welcome to Homegrown, a show about local art. I'm the one they call Clinton. I'm here with the woman who's the reason you got up this morning and probably the reason you got down last night, Leslie M. Scott Jones.
Thank you, Clinton. I am the reason people got down last night. Because you know what? Last night, I was a huntress. Yes. I was
Are you sure it's not a huntress?
No. I checked with the author. It was huntess. I was one of Artemis's huntesses. Yes, I was on stage last night in a frilly dress and a corset.
Ooh.
And a bow and arrow and all, man. I rocked that. I was badass last night. So if I sound a little froggy this morning, it's because I was yelling huzzah really loudly last night.
Huzzah.
Yeah.
In the corset.
All right. I got chased in the corset. It was awesome.
So not only did she give you rhyming couples. What was this for?
It was for 24/7.
24 the redo of 24/7, the rescheduling.
Yes.
Of 24/7.
Yeah, because it got snowed out in January.
So not only did this person have you running around yelling huzzah in a corset, but I guess is there any more than that? I mean,
oh yes, the entire script was in rhyming couplets.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. It was interesting.
Well, that'll teach you.
That'll teach me to do a favor for Ray Netzel by filling in for a sick actor.
I could have told you that was coming.
Right. You didn't warn me, Clinton.
You go and you do things behind my back. You know, you just don't give me the opportunity to sit here and go,
No, but it was fun. It was just a very long, long day.
A long day.
Yeah.
Because you had to practice that as well. So it was a long day of practicing running around. And
yes. He is just giddy with glee about thinking about that. That's thank you. Thank you for laughing at my pain.
What I'm laughing at, of course, is the idea that we have a parental advisory. Because we always want to have a parental advisory. We have an advisory out there to all parentals who might be listening to this show, who might be having the words that we speak waft past your ears and maybe in the general environment in which you are. If you have sensitives, if you have young innocents, if you have tiny bundles of joy who you want to remain these little glowing globs of hope and naivete, then you are advised at some point in the show, but some point in the show, we may say the word restitution. Restitution, which I think in Leslie's case this time is when you have to take a deep, deep rest after prostituting yourself for Ray Netzel for 24/7.
Oh my God. No, seriously, like it was fun, but I'm so freaking tired. I'm just don't pull the tiger's tail today, okay? Just don't.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll just shift to our first guest. And as it looks, maybe our only guest. Who knows? But we are so pleased to have back with us. Pleased to have back with us. Joining us here for a second time, the one of the founders and the artistic director of Charlottesville's own Victory Hall Opera Company, Miriam Gordon Stewart.
Hi. So let me get this straight. You had to spend all day rehearsing in a corset, and it was really, really hard. Yeah. Do I need to say it? Like, welcome to my world.
Wow. There's a little shade there, I'm thinking.
The opera
rhyming
singer
couplets.
Threw down.
She did. She completely threw down. Ouch.
The professional opera singer threw down.
I tugged the tail. Well, what can I say?
And let me tell you. The corset was actually my idea because I was like, well, you know, I'm a huntress. I'm in, you know, I'm in the forest. Like, I don't have time to be wearing.
You went to a Xena place.
I did. I completely went to
Xena.
Yeah,
I get it.
And I actually got a friend of mine. They didn't have a corset at the theater that would fit the girls. So I had a friend of mine go by my house and get my stash of corsets.
A stash of corsets?
And bring them to the theater. And I just laid them out in front of the director. And I was like, which one?
Wow.
Stash of corsets.
I do, and they're very nice. I ordered them from England, so they're steel boned instead of like plastic or whatever.
Right.
So they're gonna last forever. And they're gorgeous.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
There's nobody who doesn't look better in a corset.
Right.
And I know it's not a feminist thing to say. But
I think it's a completely feminist thing to say. Like who doesn't what woman doesn't want to be
to
in
be
a corset.
In pain all day.
Well, yeah.
To look good.
Pain, whatever. But what woman doesn't want to, like, I mean, it does wonders for the girls. I mean, it gives you such a
nice
hourglass shape.
Yes.
And, you know, you can't really, you know, sit or bend over, but, you know, whatever.
No. Breathing, overrated.
It really is.
Yeah.
It actually, because I was yelling so much, it actually helped with my breath control because I knew I only had so much space to expand.
Uh-huh.
So I had to really use, I went back to my singing days and really had to use my muscles and project.
Yeah. It makes you breathe really low.
Yeah.
Below the corset line.
Exactly.
Into whatever is below the corset line.
Which, you know, for singers, that's what they tell us we're supposed to do.
Supposed
You're
to
not
do.
Supposed to do
yeah.
chest breathing. You're supposed yeah. to from your diaphragm. Yes. Okay. Thank you.
We digress.
I'm just enjoying this conversation because it seems like there's a contradiction here, right? I mean, there's constriction, problems breathing, but I've heard, and so is it true? I've heard that the corset helps support in a certain way that it actually helps you sing better the way you're supposed to sing. Is that right?
It gives you something to push against, which can feel good, actually.
Yeah. Other than your direction.
Yeah, exactly.
So, how are things going with the Victory Hall Opera Company?
Victory Hall Opera is going great, yeah. We have had our first two events, which were both fundraisers and audience-building events and just letting people know who we are because we're new in town.
And didn't they... I know that at least one of them sold out. Didn't both of them sell out?
No, the second one sold out. Yeah.
I remember that because I was about to go and attend it, and all of a sudden, that was not an option. So good for you guys.
Yeah, yeah. That was great. And then we have another event coming up next weekend on Sunday afternoon. This is going to be the third and final event. So if you're getting tired of events and you just want to hear an opera already, then this is the last one. But this helps get the opera on the stage. So
right.
This is really important. So this event next week is called Amuse-Bouche. And it's going to be a really interesting kind of tasting event. And I know in Charlottesville there are a few tasting events around. This one is a little different in that it's at Barbersville Vineyards, and it involves their wine and, of course, having just won the cup this weekend. You know, if you want to taste the winner, then this is a good chance.
Oh, did they?
They won the cup.
It was this weekend. That's right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And food from Palladio Restaurant, but also our singers have chosen music to pair with each individual wine. So it's really cool. So this event is about sort of helping people get into the mind of a musician in terms of how we listen to music and describe music. Because we use all sorts of different terminology that you might not realize we use. So, you know, when we describe sound, we describe it using color or texture. You know, we might say someone's voice is golden, or, you know, that a song is dusty, or, you know, all this kind of stuff that, and people are used to using this kind of words to describe food and wine. So we kind of thought, look, let's see if the same vocabulary can apply to music. And, yeah, it's going to be cool.
So, extending the suggestive metaphor, does that mean that for singers and musicians, music is nourishing?
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Wait a minute. You're a singer. You're a musician.
I am not a singer and
yes,
a musician.
Yes, you are. You play guitar.
I'm a guy who sits next to you and talks on the radio. That's who I am.
Oh, my God. You play the guitar. You sing. I have heard you sing. You know this.
Why don't you just give us a few bars and we'll sort this out right here and now.
There you go.
I was at a few bars last night.
Oh, my goodness.
I served you up that one over
yes,
the plate.
You did. Thank you very much.
Okay, this is kind of sad. Our guest is more sharp than we are.
What do you mean we? I'm not the one who spent time not being a huntress.
Wow. Ooh. Wow. Just threw me under the bus there, didn't you?
No. Not at all.
You know
not
what?
At all. No bus throw.
Mm.
No bus throw. I leave that for you. I leave that for you. Mm. So what kind of aria pairs well with a rosé?
Well, you know, this is the interesting thing is we have two singers coming next weekend, both of whom are phenomenal. Shari Gruber, who's a soprano, and Will Ferguson, who's a tenor. So each one of them, we gave them sort of the free rein to choose their own music to pair with the wines, having read descriptions of the wines. So you get not only two different voices and two different styles of repertoire from the two different voice types, but you get to see into two different personalities and what they hear in the wine, if you know what I mean. So, you know, Will Ferguson might pair a Viognier with a Schubert song, you know, because that's what he feels about Viognier.
Okay.
Whereas Shari might pair a Viognier with a sort of, you know, exotic French aria, because that's how she feels about Viognier. So you get an insight into the performers as well as into the wine and the music.
Nice. So I'm sorry.
I just said, wow, it's a really cool idea. And as you say, I don't think many people realize what really goes into creating a performance, especially an opera performance, and how much not only preparation as, you know, technical preparation, but artistic preparation too. Like, I don't think, you know, when people who aren't used to going to opera go to an opera, they have this view that it's, oh, well, you know, that's like, it's theater. Okay. That was blocking. Like, they were told to do that. They didn't have to put anything into that. They're just standing there and singing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to be honest, the traditional operatic product is a little more like that than our product is. So we are trying to kind of adjust the balance on that in terms of giving singers more input into, you know, the performance that they're actually going to give. A lot of the time in opera, singers come in right at the end of the creative process. So a lot of decisions have already been made. The piece has been chosen, and the director has come up with a concept, and the costume designer has designed the costumes. And right at the last minute, the singers come in and they're told about this amazing thing that has already been put into place, right? So in our company, we start with the singers. And we start with our ensemble, who are a permanent ensemble who we've already chosen because of the kinds of performers that they are. And we say, what do you want to do? You know, what roles do you want to do? What do you feel like you should really rock, but you would never get cast in for some dumb reason. And those reasons vary.
I love that idea.
And yeah, and just we base it on who they are. So, you know, if we have a character that's usually played by a bouncy blonde ingenue, and we have, you know, a petite Jewish middle-aged woman cast in it, then we change the character. We make the production fit the performers, you know, to a greater degree than you would normally see, so that we can cast out of the box. We can tell some different stories to the ones that we see over and over again.
Well, and by doing that, you're also bringing people who may not like opera or think they don't like opera. You're making it more relatable to them.
Yeah, exactly. And representing a greater cross section of society.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And we could all stand to do a little bit of that.
Yeah. So our main stage production that's coming, I'm not here to talk about this. I'm going to come back and talk about this later.
Oh, of course you are. But
she says,
ahead.
Inviting herself.
Go ahead.
But our main stage production is an opera called, we're calling it Someone Younger, but it's Der Rosenkavalier by Strauss, which I know you guys are familiar with.
I love Strauss.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a little Strauss.
And it's, you know, it's this really traditional show. Usually it's massive, it's 5 hours long, and it's cast generally with sort of the same types of performers. And our cast is 50% African-American. So we are telling a different story than the usual one that gets told. We're not pretending that those black actors are white characters.
Yeah.
And expecting everybody to sort of say, oh, yeah, but they're really supposed to be white.
Wait a minute. So how large is this cast?
Six.
Six?
Yeah.
And you 50% of them are African-American?
Yeah.
You found three African-American opera singers?
Two singers, one actor.
Good gracious.
What do you mean? Yeah, are you surprised that there are African-American opera singers?
Yes, yes, I am.
You are?
Because I have been alive and awake in this culture for a while, and I've actually seen opera for a while, and because I was actually dragged to opera when I was a child and saw very, 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 very few black people up on stage.
Yeah. That does not mean that they don't exist.
Yes.
You
know how I know they exist, like have known that they existed? My great aunt was an opera singer in Philadelphia.
Oh, please. Awesome.
I'm not joking. She moved to Philadelphia in her 30s. She started her own catering company, and she'd always been a singer. So she started singing professionally, and she was an opera singer. And she was really sweet. Her name is Mary. She was absolutely adorable, like 4'5". I mean, just cute and petite and whatever. When she got married and moved back down here, her husband worked nights. Well, he knew she loved singing so much that he bought her a grand piano to put in their living room. He was horrible to wake up to go to work. So every night to wake him up to go to work, she would sit down at the piano and sing opera to wake him up.
Yeah, that's brutal.
It is.
Yeah. No, half of, I mean, not half. Let's say, yes, a third. So we have three African-American members of our ensemble. And they are all performing, you know, internationally. They're fabulously successful. And I'm not saying that that is commonplace at the moment, but that's not because of the lack of people graduating who are qualified. It's the same old story. Maybe it's not the same old story. So it's a traditional art form, right?
Mm-hmm.
Similar to maybe classical ballet, where, for example, the American Ballet Theatre has just gotten their first principal dancer, who's an African American woman.
Yes, Misty, we love you.
And that's kind of ridiculous.
That it took that long.
That it took that long. And if you think that, okay, you know, Missy had to deal with people's ideas about body type and all this kind of stuff. You know, opera, I don't know what our excuse is, except that people seem to want to see or a certain audience that has been funding our art form has wanted to see the same stories told in the same way over and over again.
Well, I think certainly you've had to hit on a significant reason for it. I mean, you look at the not just the audience for opera, but the supporters.
Yeah.
For opera.
Yeah.
And so much of the canon for opera, these wonderful, wonderful works that were produced by European countries over a century ago and not written to have people other than Europeans from over a century ago, or at least certain Europeans from over a century, or white Europeans from over a century ago, cast in them.
Yeah.
And it's and actually when you were here before, I think we talked a little bit about this, that it seemed like the more formal performance arts like opera, like ballet, they seem to be much more arts of repetition.
Yeah, I wrote an article about this recently in the Huffington Post. It's called Opera's Bizarro World. You can Google it. But it's about exactly this topic. It's about, hang on, why are we needing to reproduce exactly the same productions over and over again, down to the movements, down to the costumes? I mean, that to me is not art anymore. And yeah, I won a lot of friends with that article, as you can imagine. But you know, it's true. And I mean, we've gotten over this with Shakespeare. I mean,
that's what I was just thinking.
Other classical art
Even shakes, you know, shakes a finger at us twisting and bending Shakespeare to our will, you know. And I don't think it's simply because it's public domain and you can.
No, I don't think either. I mean, people sort of have managed to get their head around this idea that it's not about two gentlemen of Verona. It's like it's a metaphor.
Yes. Yes. Know? We are telling a human story.
Yeah, these are archetypes. And I mean, opera is packed full of archetypes that can be transplanted at will into any, basically, you know, any different storyline, any different setting, any different race. It's, you know, you've got to tell a story that has narrative sense, of course, but we can do better with that. So, yes, there are black opera singers.
I don't think Clinton was expecting that particular diatribe, but hey, whatever.
22 minutes past the hour, you're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and this is Homegrown, a show about local art. And if you're just tuning in, welcome, lucky you, because we're here having a wonderful conversation with Miriam Gordon Stewart, the co-founder and artistic director of Victory Hall Opera Company. We're talking about various number of things. Victory, why Victory Hall? I don't think we
commonly
even
asked question. Yeah, so Victory Halls were built all over the English-speaking world, basically, after World War One. They were built quite often by the townsfolk themselves as community theatre spaces, but also there was this sense that you wanted to attract these touring high-level artists from New York and, you know, classical artists and other artists from New York who were traveling around the country. And so if you had this nice hall, they would come and they would include you as part of their tour. So it's this kind of dual purpose space for towns, small towns like Charlottesville, you know, there's one in Scottsville. But they're all over, they're all over the world. There are some in Scotland, there are some in Australia. And we liked this idea and we're sort of trying to evoke this time period where art was all about this intersection between community involvement and, this sort of aspirational idea about high quality. We like that meeting place. And Victory Halls, they're so special. And I feel like we kind of, those spaces are disappearing a little bit as well.
Yes.
You know, right?
Yes, they are.
Not just a little bit, sister.
Yeah. It's hard now to find a place to perform. I mean, wouldn't it be great if there was a Victory Hall in Charlottesville where we could all just kind of, we could book our time slot and we could rehearse there and we could perform there and everyone would go there and know it really well and feel comfortable there.
Yeah, I don't know what you mean. I've never had that fantasy at all. I can't imagine that there's been a time that I've found myself musing over just that prospect.
Yeah, yeah.
So how did you make this connection with Barboursville Vineyards? That sounds like a really interesting and beneficial thing.
Yeah.
And is it going to be done? Where's it going to be done? Is it going to be done by the ruins? Is it
going to it's going to be inside.
Right. I think so.
And yeah, we went to Barboursville. Originally, we were looking for a winery, I guess, to do this event. And we had heard about the events that Barboursville used to do there, the four county players.
Yes, the Shakespeare.
Shakespeare
by the ruins.
By the ruins. And so we thought, this guy must be into art. So we went to talk to him about it. And sure enough, he was like, yes, I love doing this kind of thing. Luca Paschina was very enthusiastic about the project. And he offered us the space. And he's been super generous in, you know, throwing in their fancy octagon wine and stuff like that. So yeah, it's the perfect venue for us. It's a really nice acoustic in there. There are still tickets available. If you want to look into the event next week, it's on Sunday at 5 p.m. Tickets are $120, but they include the meal, the wine, and incredible music, full concert program. And it's a fundraiser for us to make sure that we get our show happening in August. So our website, victoryhallopera.org, and you will find under our shows and events page details about Amuse-Bouche.
Amuse-Bouche.
He just loves saying that.
Yeah.
It's a fun phrase to say.
Yeah.
How have your singers taken to having this unprecedented level of ability to contribute to the creative side of things?
They are nuts about it. Yeah, it's like it's a singer utopia that we are trying to create, and they are responding as you would expect. Yeah, they are coming forward with amazing ideas. They are sort of, yeah, contributing at higher levels than they've ever been allowed to. And
your idea is to take this process into fuller productions,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we will have a director, we'll have a conductor, but it's more about the kind of atmosphere that you create in a rehearsal room that is more inclusive and does not have the traditional authority structure imposed on it.
Are you afraid at all that not having the traditional authority structure is going to alienate some artists that are used to the traditional authority structure, that really become emotionally invested in it? Because it is a bit...
The ones who I'm taking authority away from, you mean?
Yeah.
Or even people that that have just been comfortable with the old setup.
Yeah. It is a concern in a way, because we're creating a new process. So you take one thing away, you take away one structure, and you're not entirely sure what is going to take its place and how that's going to work. But at the same time, if you make this really clear from the outset with people who you approach to collaborate with you on the project, you attract the right, you attract the kinds of people that are interested in this way of working. So long as you're kind of honest about it up front and make sure that everyone is genuinely interested in that style of work, which a lot of directors and conductors are. They are, you know, directors in particular are often, like really often in the traditional system, saying to me, you know, I wish the singers would offer more, or they would come up with their own stuff, and they love working in that way. But just because of the nature of the system, it's, you know, time and scheduling and all this kind of, you know, stuff, they don't have the luxury of working in that way. So this gives them an opportunity to do that as well. It's not just beneficial for the singers and the audience.
Excellent. So the full production coming up is Strauss.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on more modern opera?
What are my thoughts on them, on more modern opera?
Right. Is that something that Victory Hall...
Are we going to do any?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. We're going to do opera from the whole continuum.
Because
so,
speaking, because once again, going touching on something that we spoke of before, I remember again from my childhood of attending opera productions, really getting a very strong opinion of the people around me that they were that modern opera, the phrase modern opera was almost a pejorative.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
We have a lot of plans in that area. We do plan to do commissions. We also plan to start a training course for composers who want to write vocal music, which is something that's missing from conservatoriums across the world at the moment, a singer-taught course about writing for singers. So, and we hope that some really great stuff comes out of that. But yeah, this anybody who balks at the term modern opera now hasn't probably heard a wide range of it that exists. I mean, I think that there's still a tendency to associate this term modern opera with, or contemporary opera with, some sort of atonal stuff that was started back that's now quite old fashioned.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been a lot of changes and evolutions in contemporary opera that, you know, and of course people maybe don't know about them because they don't get performed very often and they don't get performed over and over again. So, you know, but there are so many styles of contemporary opera being written now that are not in that style, that atonal kind of 50s reminiscent, I don't know, Stockhausen style that now to me is old fashioned and you know, but it's an ongoing process. We need to be investing in finding the next great American compositional voices for this art form, Australian ones too. I'm just going to throw that out there.
There you go. Well, Miriam, thank you so much for coming and joining us this morning. Could you remind people again, Amuse Bouche, where and when?
Barbersville Vineyards, Sunday the 17th, which is next Sunday at 5 p.m. Tickets available on victoryhallopera.org. If you have any questions, you can call 434-227-9978.
Excelente. Look forward to having you back again.
Cool. Bye, guys.
Bye. And let's take a moment to talk about some of the stuff that is coming up. Today is the last chance to see Rock of Ages at Shannon Arts in Stanton, Virginia. Today is also the last day to see Navajo Weaving, Geometry of the Warp and Weft at UVA's Fralin Art Museum. But if you miss that, don't worry. The Fralin has got exhibits still going, currently running at the Fralin. Two Extraordinary Women, the Lives and Art of Maria Causeway and Mary Darby Robinson. And also, currently running until May 8th, Richard Sarah Prince. Both of those at the Fralin Art Museum. Go take advantage of them. They're right there. Currently running at Guerrilla Theater on Allied Street, right off of downtown area, until April 17th, Polaroid Stories, Greek Myth Meets Modernity on the Fringes of Urban Society. Also starting today and going until April 17th, it's the Tom Tom Festival. 30 events, nearly 60 venues, and an uncountable number of people who, for the fifth year in a row, sit back and say, what the hell is the Tom Tom Festival again? What was it supposed to be? I don't... No, makers, music, I don't know, whatever. It's there, it's here, enjoy it. Speaking of enjoying things, Thursdays to Saturdays, currently running until April 16th. It's No Wake, a multimedia outdoor performance and dance installation piece at the Ix Art Park by Jennifer Hoyt Tidwell, the 2016 public artist for the Bridge Progressive Arts Initiative and a former guest on Homegrown. Go back and look at our podcast on zevopodcast.org to get our interview with Jen Hoyt Tidwell talking about No Wake for more information. Also, today and tomorrow, finally, it is here, the Shenandoah Fringe Festival in Stanton, Virginia. Tickets at shenfringe.com. April 15th to May 7th, Hunter Gatherers opens at Live Arts. Two couples have dinner and fall into a frank discussion about being on top, being below, and how humans are just animals after all is said and done. More info at livearts.org. And also on April 16th, the Charlottesville Writers Workshop, the Personal Essay Workshop. The personal essay is the most malleable form of creative nonfiction that relies upon the writing skills of a storyteller and the critical thinking of a lawyer. Instructor Jay Varner talks about how to get that working. For more, check out www.writerhouse.org. And also on the 16th, it's an open mic comedy night with Chris Allen at Fellini's. From the 16th to 17th, auditions at Live Arts for the Teen Theater Company's summer musical, Nice Work If You Can Get It. Looking for youth from ages 14 to 20. And if you're below ages 14 to 20, for instance, if you are from 8 to 14, same day auditions for Live Arts Youth Theater musical, Seussical the Musical. Check those out. And from the 16th to the 17th, the Performers Exchange Project take their latest show, The Convolution of Pip and Twig, to Dogtown Dance Theater in Richmond. So if you missed the last performance of The Convolution of Pip and Twig, head on over to Richmond and sit there at our friends at the Dogtown Dance Theater. And let's look at just a little bit of the music coming up today. Ben DeLaurentiis at Wild Wolf Brewery doing a double shot, 2 and 7. April 12th, it's Uncovered with Brady Earnhardt at S Cafe. Our singer-songwriter open mic. Rooster Blood plays at Rapture on the 14th. On the 15th, we're going to have our next guest, and we'll talk about that. Also on the 15th, Bob Bonetta at Fellini's. Duck Baker at Seaville Coffee. April 16th, it's Lauren Hoffman in The Secret Storm with Maniac Seas at the Southern Cafe Music Hall. Oh my gosh, that's a concert not to miss. And if you're going to miss that, then catch Glass Betty at Heritage on Main in Waynesboro or DJ Groovematic at Rapture. And April 17th, of course, Amuse Bouche by the Virtue Hall Opera Company. I think I heard somebody talking about that just recently. Every Monday, singer-songwriter night at the local. Every Wednesday, Bob Bonetta at Cafe Katura and the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. And also every Wednesday, Jim Wave at Blue Moon Diner. Every Thursday, Woolen Writers Revival, hosted by Will Thomas Reed and Brian Craddock at Firefly. And also every Thursday, down at Miller's, it's the John Dearth Quintet, because sometimes you just got to come down to Dearth. And that is just some of the wonderful artistic things going on at our wonderful artistic town. If you are an artist and have an event and you would like us to announce it on our show, please, please let us know about it. We will announce it. Contact us at www.facebook.com/homegrownwpvc or email us at homegrown947@gmail.com. Homegrown, now you know.
Hi, I'm Russell Richards, 8 minutes past, and you're listening to Homegrown on WPVC.
38 minutes past the hour. We're about to jump into our next guest. Make sure you stay tuned, because after this is the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with your host, Sean McCord, talking to Charles Blue from the National Radio Astronomy Observatory. We talk to artists, but they're going to be talking to stars. Don't give me that look. That thumbs down for that one. Okay. All right. Okay. I won't bring that one out again. But what we'll bring out is our next guest, local hip hop artist, Fly Deezy.
How's it going, guys?
How are you, man?
I'm great. Blessed to be here. Good to see you this morning.
Good to see you. Fly Deezy, Buckingham, right?
Correct. Buckingham, Virginia.
What is it that takes a young man from Buckingham, Virginia and turns him into a hip-hop artist?
Just the lifestyle, you know, just life in general. You know, coming up wasn't the best. Expressing a lot of my feelings through my music kind of helped me through life a lot. You know, just trying to stay positive and go in the right direction And I feel like, you know, music is a passion. So that's just the route I took.
Cool, cool. I know on your song Forever, you talk about growing up on the hard streets. Do you want to talk about some of that?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, Forever, that was pretty much me speaking on my brand Fly Life. Money Route was the mixtape I had out at the time. And it was just, you know, me pretty much saying, you know, where I come from and, you know, how things were hard and, you know, me chasing my dream and making it happen. And, you know, just sticking to that.
Because, you know, when most people think about Buckingham, they don't think about hard streets. I'm just...
Yeah.
Because I grew up close to Buckingham. Really? I have family in Buckingham. So, you know, it's not Compton.
Let's put that way. Yeah, it's not that bad. No. No, it's not that bad out there. But, you know, sometimes living conditions are, you know, just kind of in-house and not outside. So.
Clinton doesn't know what he's doing because I didn't make him stand up today. So he's having trouble with the chair.
Just stop it.
All right. Yeah, just sit in the corner. Okay. So other than your childhood and growing up, what mm-hmm. other things do you draw inspiration from for your music?
Just, you know, going on stage, you know, traveling. I actually do photography and filming as well. So those are things that draw me into working with other artists. And that's something that I like to do, not only perform and make music myself. I like to work and, you know, help improve other artists' skills and get them out there as well. I do associate myself with other groups in the music scene, you know, so I like to bring them forward and, you know, help them out as well.
Okay, so I'm glad you mentioned the music scene, because seriously, I don't think anybody knows what the music scene, especially as it relates to R&B and hip hop, is in Buckingham County. Like, that's just not a place you think of when you just say, you know, hip hop. Right. They're like, oh yeah, Buckingham. They got it. You know, that's not gonna happen. So, so speak on that a little bit.
I mean, Buckingham is a small town. There's a lot of talent out there. You know, it's just sometimes you have, you know, hate and, you know, there's love and hate and there's always a thin line between it. There's a lot of supporters out there, but there are a lot of people that don't want to see you shine and do your thing. You know, it's a small county. Like I said, there's a lot of talent out there. I just think more people need to work together versus judging the next person for being successful.
Well, and I think it's also that it's such a... it's such an area that's rooted in the Black community tradition, in which hip hop is not seen as something that's positive. You know, I mean, because I know, you know, if I walked into my grandma's house and started playing Tupac, she'd be like, "Turn that noise off! Yeah. What you listening to that for?" You know,
right. I understand.
So do you think that that's part of the struggle that artists in the more rural communities have?
I do think that's an impact as people look at it. But I also think every artist should be listened to before they actually get judged. Because not everybody raps about the same thing. Mm-hmm. Not everybody raps street. Not everybody raps negative. There are some artists that actually do speak positive and, you know, have a positive vision, because it's all about vision. You know, you have to have a vision to go in the right direction. And like I said, I just think every artist should have a chance before they get judged on, you know, the material that they release.
Well said. And yet it seems that we get a lot of artists who are rapping negative, a lot of artists who are rapping the street. Do you feel that there's a pressure to do that, because that's certainly what, I don't want to say that's what sells, it's certainly what's being sold.
Right. I can agree on that. It is what's being sold. But I don't think it's really a pressure. I mean, for me myself, I look at it as more just being myself. I can't really speak on other artists, but, you know, me being myself, I don't take the negative route when it comes to my music, because I don't rap what I don't live. You know, everything in my music is definitely thorough and, you know, just me. I respect anybody that, you know, raps with their living because that's true to themselves. So I can't really, you know, speak on, you know, the pressure. I don't think there's really any pressure. Some people may be a follower, but I consider myself a leader. So that's just what I chose.
So how would you characterize, like, if you had to choose an artist that's, you know, that's making it big right now, who would you choose that you're most like?
Or at least who you're inspired by.
I listen to a number of artists. I listen to Kwani Cash. He's actually incarcerated right now, but he's from Atlanta. And I really like his sound. He was making it big before he actually got into that situation. I mean, I listen to a lot of independent people. Honestly, I don't listen to a lot of mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to a lot of people that are in the area of Charlottesville, you know, where I'm from. There's artists out there that I listen to, you know, that kind of inspires me to make myself better. You know, listen to myself and other local artists. That definitely pushes me more than the industry. You know, definitely suit everybody in the industry, but that's just how I conduct things.
Right. So what do you have an opinion on the way the industry pushes mainstream artists to talk about or speak on several, you know, like the thing that I think turns a lot of people off from rap and hip hop is that is the negative connotations that are in it about women, you know, the drug references, all that kind of stuff. Like, what I mean, and I know that a lot of artists are rapping what they live. Like they are talking about what they actually experienced.
Yeah, somehow.
And that, you know, that all started with NWA and all that, but it's kind of taken a turn where in order to be successful mainstream, mm-hmm. you have to talk about that,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so I'm just wondering how you, as a new artist, as someone independent, how do you navigate that based on trying to make a living at it, you know, trying right. to sell records,
mm-hmm. right.
you know, and actually get heard by someone who could put you in a position mm-hmm. to be mainstream. Like, how do you manage that conundrum?
Well, my opinion on the music industry, it's definitely 90% business, 10% personal. And I understand that because coming up, I paid a lot of attention to the industry. And, you know, they're definitely going to do what they can get their money from. They're going to sell what they can make money from. And then, like I said before, you know, I just kind of have to be me because, you know, real recognize real. And that's just what I go by. And, you know, I don't like to, you know, ride anybody's coattails or anything like that. So I feel like, you know, if a label wants to bring in someone, or, you know, they're going to do it because they like the artist and what they can, you know, what they can actually bring to the microphone and bring to the table. But me personally, I mean, I just have to be true to myself. You know, I can't really, you know, if I don't pop it off with the music, you know, at least I know I was, you know, true to myself and my music was thorough. So.
Right. Good. Coast to coast. That's coming up. You're going to be there.
Right.
Talk about that. How'd you make that hook
up? Coast to coast. I've been doing that for a little while now. That's actually a showcase where, you know, they travel all over the United States and, you know, you can subscribe to the actual network and, you know, go to these events and network and meet with different people. Judges are there. They definitely let you know how your music sounds, what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong. And, you know, let you know what you have to do. I actually was in Richmond yesterday. We had a showcase out there
uh-huh.
At Terry's Lounge, and that was great. That was awesome. Local rapper Easy Loke was out there,
nice.
And he actually won the XXL or Source Magazine Choice to be in the magazine yesterday, which is great. So salute him and Glitterati Global, the whole movement.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got something to play.
Why hate on me? Why hate on me? Do you feel some type of way? They used to make fun of me. Now I turn up on every beat. Throw dirt up on my name. But your main bitch down on me. Why hate on me? Why hate on me? Why hate on me? Why hate on me? Do you feel some type of way? They used to make fun of me. Now I turn up on every beat.
Turn me up, man.
Throw dirt up on my name. But your main bitch down on me. Why hate on me? Why hate on me? Why hate on me? Why hate on me? Just tryna take care of me and mine. Ain't no fake rap round this way. This shit for real, don't waste your time. I can't chill cause all these bills are catching up, they piled up high. Used to curb me and them hallways want some water, bitch, I'm fine. DZ narrow when I hit the club, don't even gotta wait in line. They be pressured to do a feature, but don't got no one that's live. I be kicking it with bro, I pop out unless I fly. She came, she love me, that's some bullshit. How? She don't know why. I'm a cool intelligent, but I'm fed up with all that line. Mixed faith and they real, call it how I see it. Donald Trump, you foul. I can't trust half of them guys we went to school with, they be wired. They're tied up on your block, cause all them so-called G's be squires. Never gonna get hip, these coming for the top. Don't get exposed, say you real, but you not. I do it for my mom, pops, and my bros on top. But don't get it confused, cause I steal people alive. Why hate on me? Why hate on me? Do you feel some type of way? They used to make fun of me. Now I turn up on every beat. Throw dirt up on my name. But your main bitch down on me. Why hate on me? Why hate on me? Why hate on me? Why hate on me? Do you feel some type of way? They used to make fun of me. Now I turn up on every beat. Throw dirt up on my name. But your main bitch down on me. Why hate on me? Why hate on me?
I'm a grind hard till it pays off. Overtime with no days. All right, nice. Tell us, what was that?
That's Why Hate. That's a song me and my one of my homeboys, Royalcy, did. We released a video probably not less than 2 weeks ago, and it already has like 11,000 views on Facebook and YouTube, so it's going crazy right now. So we were actually in Richmond yesterday before the showcase. We were shooting a video, Juice. It's actually be out in like a week. So yeah, we're working, man.
Cool, but you're a videographer as well,
right?
I'm set up.
Yeah, like, I'm learning
you,
that.
You do the story, you do the video,
right? Yeah, I have a cameraman that does the stuff now, and I'm in the process of learning and editing myself, so I can do that for the people around me and help them out as well.
Nice. Fly DZ, take a moment, tell people where they can find you.
You can find me on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spinrilla, just Google me, Fly DZ, Twitter, at Fly DZ, Instagram, at Fly DZ Music, Snapchat, Fly DZ 100. I want to give a couple shout-outs. Shout-out to my brother here with me right now, the whole Family Money Campaign. Salute Finesse Gang, KSC. Salute Glitterati Global, GG. Definitely salute everybody. Salute Music Wild Live, New Boss Life, they show love. I'm currently working on Fly Life 3. That'll be out end of the year. Hopefully I can put together an album for next year. Just get in tune, get in tune to the movement.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Where can you go from opera to hip hop in one show? I think that'll be here. Homegrown. Now it is time for the woman who walks the line, Leslie M. Scott Jones, and the part we call Leslie's Weekly Rant.
Oh, I thank you, Clinton. All right, I am not a video game person. I'm a theater geek. So when I was in high school, our version of video games was role play. And those of you who know me can get your minds out of the gutter. We played Kindred, a role-playing game with vampires, and another game whose name I can't remember. That was all about the end of the world. The only gaming system I've ever owned was a Wii. And the only reason I got that was because I had children and I wanted to beat them senseless in Wii bowling. Which I did on a regular basis, by the way. So imagine my delight
when I found out that Angela Bassett is the new face of Six in Rainbow Six Siege. Okay, for those of you who don't know about Rainbow Six, it's a military game. You take the position of an elite Black Ops team tasked with basically saving the world. It's based on a series of books by Tom Clancy. In the game, Angela, or Six, is the woman in charge. She gives you all your directions and reprimands you when you don't quite hit the mark. After reading a few interviews with Bassett concerning the game, apparently she was a huge fan of Pac-Man when it came out, so she understands the energy surrounding video games, although she admits she didn't know what went into making one that looks as real as possible. You may remember Idris Elba filming a trailer for the same game several months ago, and the hoopla that created as it was in the midst of controversy over him being possibly cast as the new Bond. Well, with the addition of Angela, this is a wonderfully good step for the industry. In an industry that has been dominated by white men, the writer of this new game is a woman, and now the leader of the team is a Black woman. And you can bet Miss Bassett is going to bring her own special brand of chutzpah to the role. Now, we have, of late, been inundated with stories concerning women, and particularly Black women, in the arts. From the Oscars to the Nina Simone biopic, this development in video games gives me hope that our situation isn't as bleak as it was at first seemed. While mainstream Hollywood may not be willing to promote and celebrate women, and particularly the Black woman, other players in mainstream are. And I think that's the answer. We as women have to find inroads to showcase what we do and just how badass we can be while doing it. I was watching an old episode of The West Wing this week when they're into the next election and the campaign manager made a remark. I love it when the women get involved. What he meant was that the most nonsense issue would be picked up by women and beaten to death. And when we are 60% of the population, we should be running the table. I propose the same thing for the arts. Women make up a huge percentage of the people doing the work of creating the shows, movies, theater, and music we ingest. And if we're not making it, we're the subject matter for it. We should be running this. We should have such a loud and powerful voice and as much power that is impossible to ignore us. And after watching the Black Girls Rock Awards last week, I think we have more than enough juice to make it happen. So, my question to you today is, what are you waiting for? And that's the weekly rant.
Really?
I told you don't pull a tiger's tail today. Don't start with me.
Really?
Don't start with me.
You realize that Black Ops doesn't actually mean Black Ops.
I know it. I know. The game is based on Rainbow an SAS Six. Team, which is out of England, which is a branch of
Rainbow Six. Doesn't I-6. Mean like the United Colors of Benetton Rainbow Six.
Well, the thing that I'm talking about that I'm happy about is that, yeah, the game is becoming a rainbow coalition, as it were. Because there were already Black characters in the game, but now there's a Black woman running the show.
Does Angela Bassett actually have her own, what did you say, signature form of badass?
Yes, she does.
I didn't realize that there was a that there was a signature form of badass.
Yes, honey.
There was the Angela Bassett line of badass. I didn't. You know what I'm waiting for? I'm waiting for you to do a rant that doesn't have to do with Black people, women, or maybe Black women, for just once. Just once.
Well, baby, I'm a Black woman, so I don't think that's gonna happen.
Well, yeah, I'm right-handed. Doesn't mean that I ignore people with left hands. Good gosh.
Yeah, but it also means you don't know anything about left-handed people because you're not one.
What? No. See, that's not true because I actually, you know left-handed people. Some of my best friends have been left-handed people. I talk to them. It's called, like, having an imagination. It's called...
Now I don't have an imagination because I speak on what I know about?
It's called having some type of wide vision, you know?
You know what? Wide vision? Yes, I'm going to show you some wide vision. We're going to step outside after this one. I told you not to pull the tiger's tail today. Don't mess with me.
Take it. We'll take it outside.
You in the parking lot, wait for me by my truck. I got you. I'm taking out my earrings right now, putting on some Vaseline. Telling, yeah. See, I told him not to mess with me today. I'm tired, I'm cranky. I've only had one cup of coffee. What the? Oh, Lord. All right. Well, thank you so much for tuning in. It's been a wonderful show. We want to thank our guests from Victory Hall Opera and Fly Jeezy for coming in and talking to us. It's been wonderful. It's been fun. And we will see everyone next week. Homegrown out.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.